Welcome to another episode of Women Leading Validation, and I'm your host, Dori Gonzalez-Acevedo, co-founder and CEO of Procellarx, a life science strategic consulting firm whose mission is to rethink, reshape, and remake software quality and validation industry for the digital future. On today's podcast, I have the honor to share with you my conversation with Rucha Patel. Rucha is the Manager of Quality and Regulatory Affairs at Mimosa Diagnostics. She did her master's in pharmaceutical sciences with specialization in quality assurance and regulatory affairs, and earning both her undergraduate and graduate degrees in India, where she was born and raised. She's an expert in both quality assurance and regulatory affairs, which includes establishing and maintaining quality management systems, conducting audits, reviewing and approving records, representing during external and internal audits, and getting ready for pre- and post-market activities, as well as submissions of medical device, including in vitro diagnostic devices. Rucha serves to constantly strive to be a learner of new skills and gaining knowledge in every field that she has every day. She loves what she does and chooses to do it, not because of the growing opportunities in the industry with good pay and scales, but because she has a vision of thriving in the field where she can use her skills and leadership qualities to establish, fix, and improve quality systems. At the core, she cannot help but notice where the gap is and then will not rest until it's fixed. Outside her professional life, Rucha is passionate about giving back to her home country of India by collaborating with local NGOs and has enjoyed helping to teach rural kids and their parents the importance of education, nutrition, as both are key elements and are fortunately often overlooked in rural parts of India. I welcome you to our conversation today and hope you enjoy. So without further ado, here's Rucha. All right. Well, welcome to another episode of Women Leading Validation. I'm here with Rucha Patel, the manager and of quality and regulatory affairs at Mimosa Diagnostics today. I'm so happy to have you join us.
Hi, Dori. I hope you're doing great. And thank you so much for having me here. It's a great opportunity for me as well, being here on a platform or recording a podcast for the first time ever in my life. So I'm kind of excited. And yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah. So I love getting first timers on because it's like I was so nervous the first time I did one. And then like as soon as you get that first one done, then you're going to want to do them all over again. So,
yeah, I think the only trick or maybe the skill that you need is like, OK, you just need to love talking. And that's about it.
Very good. So where are you joining us from? Where are you in the world?
I am situated in Niagara Falls, Canada.
Very nice. Is it cold up there today?
It's kind of going weird since last couple of weeks. So I cannot say like what day, how it looks like. But today it's a bit cloudy. It's been cloudy since last 1 week. So it gets gloomy, a little cold. But since I stay at home, work from home, so it doesn't affect me that much.
All right. Have you been working from home since COVID or has this always been the case?
No, it never has been the case. This is just because of my new job's nature, Mimosa Diagnostics. I joined Mimosa a little over a year ago, and that was the nature. It's sort of a hybrid, but most of the time I just get to work from home. And that's the perk and privilege that I'm getting.
Awesome. That's great. So for our audience, why don't you give us a good context of who you are and how you came to be as a manager in quality and regulatory affairs now? And I'm guessing preview of this journey, it's not been necessarily straight and narrow. So why don't you tell us about it?
Oh, absolutely not. Because right now I stay in Canada, but I'm basically from India. I was born in India and raised in India. So I did my bachelor's of pharmaceutical sciences and master's of pharmaceutical sciences, both from India, and my master's specialization was quality assurance and regulatory affairs. So that actually the specialization part picked my interest into this quality assurance and regulatory aspects, because in the final year of your master's, you know, they ask us to do like a dissertation topic, the way you see like thesis works and PhD and everything. So that piqued my interest in regulatory stream. After that, I first started my journey of working in a clinical research organization named VIDA Clinical Research. That's based in India as well. And in the hometown where I grew up, it was a very interesting job for me for the first time, because I got a job as quality auditor, like, you know, right after college. And It was an interesting journey because when I stepped in, I was like what, around like 21, 22 years old. And when people looked at me auditing the in-process things and, you know, other things, they just felt like, okay, what is this little girl is going to do? And how is she going to, you know, think about all these processes and how is she going to face the challenge and everything? But that turned out well, and that piqued my interest in auditing, first of all. So whatever the skills and aspects of quality assurance that I have learned, I will give Beta Clinical Research a great, appreciation on the role that they have played. After working there for over like a little over 2.5 years, I got an opportunity to work at the Intas Pharmaceutical company. That's again in my hometown, Ahmedabad, where I'm from. So that company used to be a contract manufacturer for many MNC companies. So I get an opportunity to work as a corporate quality assurance associate over there, who used to look after a little bit of regulatory aspects too. But in terms of corporate, if you say, I used to handle most of the post-market part of the product lifecycle. So that included handling the complaints, pharmacovigilances, product safety, patient safety data, post-market surveillance, product recalls, handling and everything. And then, you know, whenever there is an investigation part, you have to see the batch records of the products and then make sure that everything went well. And then finalizing the, that regulatory requirements that goes with that. The fun part of that job was I used to focus on all the European market. So in Europe, every country has different regulation. So you have to know, like, what are those requirements? What are the language requirements? What are the other aspects? So it's always challenging being an auditor or maybe a quality assurance person or maybe regulatory affairs personnel to know that even if there is a particular region who's asking for something different, you just have to know it. So I just loved that part. And while I was working at Intas, I got a huge opportunity to move my life from India to Canada. But the only downside of that we came to Canada right before the COVID hit. So COVID started March 2020, we came here in February 2020. So that had a great impact on us getting a job over here. It was a negative impact for sure. Mm-hmm. So we had to try, and I had to try for like 6 months to get a job. But fortunately, Norgine Biotech during that time was working with COVID kits. So the RT-PCR kits and sample collection kits and all this RNA isolation and all the kits that, you know, goes with the COVID detection and everything. Mm-hmm. So during that time, fortunately, because of the COVID, I got an opportunity to work as regulatory affairs coordinator there. That was my first ever time working in the medical device industry. Norgine Biotech was in vitro diagnostic devices, not actual medical devices, but still it was the first time. The regulations and everything were different. It took me a while to learn all these things. But because of my performance, I got to be promoted within 6 months to specialist from coordinator, worked there for another 1 year. And finally, I got an opportunity to work at Mimosa Diagnostics. At Mimosa, they had a great challenge with the quality management system that they had in place. So they were looking for a person who can, you know, establish or maintain and, you know, make it a little pretty, because they were supposed to target ISO and MDSAP certification, which is a huge milestone for any medical device company. So my first focus when I came in was to do that. And within 8 to 9 months, I was able to successfully establish the whole quality management system and pass our first ever ISO and MDSAP certification audit. So now Mimosa is certified, and I take great pride in that. And the rest is history.
Yeah, that's wonderful. It's a very big accomplishment, right? Especially with a small group to be able to lead that and establish it and then have to, you know, certify it. Like, that's a lot.
Yeah, congratulations. Definitely. Thank you so much. Because it was my first time, you know, trying something from the scratch, because up until the point I was working in the shadow of other managers. Here I had to be the manager, and here I had to take a lead on that. So that was challenging. I was nervous, quite afraid, but then I just took all the challenges up, and then, that's how it went.
What are some of the qualities about you that you think lended itself to make that successful?
I would say it's a confidence. sometimes whenever I'm given a task that just doesn't feel like, okay, I know a lot about it, or I'm 100%, you know, capable to do that, I just put up a confident face. I, you know, have a positive affirmation inside, and I just say that, okay, I can do that. I can figure these things out, because there is nothing in the world there is no question that doesn't have an answer. So you just have to find it. So whenever those kind of a situation comes in, I just say that, okay, I will figure this out. I will do it. And I just absorb all the confidence within me. And I think that's what it is. I think I get that skill from my mom. I have seen her doing all these challenges and leading and, you know, facing all these challenges in her life and still coming out of it, being a great person and great achiever in life. So I guess I have just seen it, and that's how I learn it.
That's wonderful. One of the things when I'm hearing you saying, it's very different than when we hear sometimes women talk about imposter syndrome, right? You're not actually deploying imposter syndrome. You're actually saying, I have an answer. Right.
Yeah.
I might not know it immediately, but I have an answer, and I'm going to seek within myself to figure out what that answer is, which is a very different mindset, right?
Yeah,
than,
absolutely.
You know what we? Because again, sometimes I'm fearful, right? And that imposter syndrome is it imposter syndrome, or is it like just at that moment? Is it I just I'm dropping my my confidence in that moment, right? To then, okay, regroup, figure out like, who do I need to reach out to? What do I need to do in order to circle back around and move forward, right?
Yeah.
And so,
but I would say like showing it on my face that, okay, I'm dropping that confidence, or maybe I'm not able to do that, might affect the confidence of the other people that they have in me. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes as a quality assurance or regulatory affairs personnel in company, many people or many other groups are relying on you. So when you just put down your face, and when you put down your confidence, and when you just say like, okay, I don't think this is my cup of tea, they feel shaken up alongside with me. So I had to put up that face just because they are relying on me. And that's what I just feel like that, okay, if they have confidence enough to, you know, give this task to me that, okay, hey, Rudra, can you do this to me? Do this for me. I think I deserve that confidence in myself as well. That okay, yes, I can do that.
Mm-hmm. That's great. The question for you around that confidence: do you have curious question? Do you have confidence in your not knowing? Like, meaning, are you also of a character to be able to say in a meeting, yeah, I don't know that answer, and being confident in knowing that you don't know the answer?
Yes, I have been, because that's the fact that I want to deliver to other people as well, that, okay, when I don't know anything, there might be a way to figure these things out from another sources, or maybe work things out together. So if I don't say that, that means I am lying to themselves, I'm lying to myself, and I'm delivering something wrong that's not in me. So I guess that leads to a shaken confidence in myself for other people as well. And maybe going forward, if they find out that, okay, I didn't know it, but I just, you know, bluffed my way around and I got caught up, in future, they might not even, you know, come to me with some kind of a things. So I always say that, okay, I don't know this, but I can definitely get back to you after, you know, doing some research on that. So I always go with that answer rather than, okay, I don't know. Maybe you can get help from someone else, or maybe, oh, yes, I know that. I'll just give it to you.
Yeah. So in your career today, has there been obstacles that you've had to figure out how to overcome, or has this been just like a series of great, you know, circumstances that have rolled into one to the other?
Not really. So when I say like from my first company to from my first job to second job, when I say like I got an opportunity, obviously I had to dig out that opportunity, because sometimes what happens, and I'm not very much proud to admit or say this, state this facts about the work culture that goes in India, or maybe it's all around the world, that women get promotions later than how men get it. So whenever you are putting your best work out, and they say that they are recognizing it, but they are not rewarding it, it it hurts in a way that you cannot explain, because you see like your other male colleague who just joined with you going mm-hmm. ahead and you are just staying back. I think that affects. So those situations takes you to, you know, go out in the market, search some opportunity that, you know, may be helpful to bring you up in your growth, personal growth, career growth. And that's how I got my second job. I got to find that. And the worst part about that whenever you are leaving, people just state the facts or maybe just try to admit that, okay, we were just about to promote you, or we were just about to give that title to you, or this raise to you. Mm-hmm. You deserve that. And maybe you just stay back. Within 6 months, it's your turn. But mm-hmm. I think sometimes you just have to give up and you have to think for yourself. Because it's always, you know, hurtful to get out of the company and finding another job where you have not just shown your great performances, but also have made great connections, great friends, and you just have to leave mm-hmm. them behind just to, you know, find out an opportunity that you could have gotten there, but you didn't. And I think that
right.
affects. And those are the challenges that you always get. Because sometimes as a female employee or as a women employee, anywhere you go, maybe there are some times that your opinions are being questioned and mm-hmm. you might be right, but I think somehow they just come to know very later in the aspects, or maybe they just make you feel like that, okay, now I
feel right. you. Make you feel less than, right? So there, yeah. While I think you originally stated, like, you know, yes, there is definitely still across the board, right, differences between men and women, but we also know within other communities, right, and communities of color, that there are even more significant differences, right? And so I can imagine your experience in India is even more significantly potentially women differences,
yeah.
right, than you experience in Canada.
That's right. That's right. And that's how, and that's when people ask me that, okay, how do you like it there? What's the difference between work culture of India and Canada? Especially my friends from back home, when they ask me all these questions, I just state the facts that, okay, I have experienced this in my 3 years of experience here in Canada. That, okay, no matter what you do, no matter how straightforward you are being heard. You are not being disrespected. And I think I have been fortunate enough to work in a workplaces where they heard me, they recognized my mm-hmm. work, and they have rewarded me in a way that I didn't feel back home, or maybe mm-hmm. the other earlier 4 years of my career. So I really see the difference. Of course, there mm-hmm. will be some examples where here in Canada or USA, there might be a situation where women are facing the same things. But this is what my experience has, you know, shown me.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so do you think that, I'm curious around the move to Canada, has that given you the opportunity to take on some more leadership skills as a woman in ways in advance of potentially if you stayed in India that you might not have gotten those as early as you have?
Absolutely, because I'm standing here on my career at like what 7.5 year mark, and mm-hmm. I am already working as a manager of quality assurance at some company. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say that would have been a situation back in India. I might be some senior research associate or maybe specialist. There might mm-hmm. be I'll be seeing like 5 or 6 years in between me being a manager where I will be anywhere, you know. So mm-hmm. Yeah.
How do we help other women in this sort of situation, right? So obviously there's things that we can and can't do, right? We can't move everyone from one country to another. But what can we do to help empower better, and how can we also give our support, do you think?
So I think when they say that women lift other women, I think that's a fact. Right now, the company I work for, Mimosa, our CEO, she is a woman. And I have always loved women leadership, not just because I'm a woman and I just want to see women in an empowered state or maybe a state higher than men. No, that's not the situation. But when I met, so during my interview process, I never got a chance to meet her. After I joined, I met her. And the energy and the words of motivation and the push she gives us, it's really effective, you know. And whenever I tell her that, okay, hey, I got an opportunity to speak at a conference that was last month, she was the first one to be happy. And she gave me tips on how to do that because she knew that, okay, this was my first ever speech. So she gave me some tips that how should I do that. And she always encouraged women leadership. And you won't believe that many, like majority of our employees at managerial level, they are female at Mimosa. So she usually, you know, pushes that women empowerment. She shoves everyone's in everyone's face that, okay, women are being empowered. And she just calls herself as a CEO and not the CEO because she's a woman and a CEO. And I really feel proud about that. So that's what I just say, that women empowers other women. And if you just, you know, don't just, there's a basic nature of women as well that, you know, they get jealous seeing other women's success as well. So if we just keep that nature aside and try to see and visualize that, okay, I am here at a manager level and one of my friend or other ex-colleague is still stuck at there, I might be able to find a way to tell her that, okay, I will see if I have some kind of an opportunity at my hand. And if not, I will just try to give her some tips and tricks around like how to get over that and how to prove herself. And maybe that can be useful because other than that, if you try to change society, it's never going to be happening.
Never going to work.
It's not going to work. But it's just in your hand that if you uplift any one single woman in your nearest connection, I think that will help to, you know, build a strong women's society around us.
Nice. So who are some of your role models?
I will always say my mom. She is my role model, and whatever I have learned, like even including my work ethics, it's all from her. So if you say about like women as my role model, it's always my mom because there's quite a story around there. So when I was born, my mom was still working, but during that time, like back in India, the maternity leave, even today, they suck. They are not that great when you get here. So she always tells me that she never get a chance to spend some time with me when I was a kid. She had to go to work when I was 4 months old, you know, leaving me home, because she wanted to do something great for herself. When I was little, like maybe 4 or 5 years old, she had to go to other town to study. She did her bachelor's and master's in library science after I was born. And I have an elder brother as well. So with two kids and living in a joint family back in India, doing a job, handling a family, she was studying. And she got first rank in the university. So she was university topper at that time at the age of 35. And she has just always tried to, you know, speak the truth, take her own stand, because somehow she has faced all the challenges in her life, be it home, be it office. So I have seen her, you know, overcoming those challenges. I have seen her being successful and still taking care of her kids. And asking us to, you know, do more for ourselves. She always pushes me. Even if I say that I did my master's in pharmaceutical sciences in QARA, truth be told, I wanted to do MBA. My mom told me that, okay, you can do MBA at whatever the stage in life you want, but this is your chance to continue your education in the same field that you are. Just do it. Go through this phase. And once you are out, if you feel like, okay, you regretted this choice, you can do whatever you want. But I can say that because of her, I took that master's. And because of her, I am where I am right now. So whenever I get like a smallest of achievement, she's the first one I call her. And she's the first person to be happy. Then my dad, of course, he's also proud of me. But yeah, I just call both of them and they are just always happy to see me successful. And I will just say like my husband, I'm just fortunate enough to have a husband like him. Like he always supports me as well. He never feels insecure about anything that her wife is getting this kind of opportunities and everything. So I think it's always good.
I love what you're saying, and I hear a network of support, both at your current opportunity where you're at, mm-hmm. right, as well as in your life. And there's a community, especially in quality, right? Mm-hmm. And this has been for my career, you know, that's now way too long. But, you know, there's always been a collaborative way in which quality people have worked together. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering and curious, as you've started in this budding career that you have you been able to get a network in quality across different organizations and start feeling yourself out?
Not really. Mm-hmm. Not from the beginning of my career, because most of the times what happens is quality assurance people are the least one who are, you know, getting any customer exposures or going out for mm-hmm. conferences or anything mm-hmm. like that, you know. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you just stay at your desk and do your work and go home. Those are the quieter people I have ever seen, like quality assurance people. They just sit at the mm-hmm. desk and do their work. So the closest network that I used to have was within the cabin or workplace that I used to have my colleagues. But when I came here in Canada, it changed. It changed in many ways, because whenever you go out or when you have like other clients coming to your organization, they come and talk to you. The other people from other departments, like cross-functional group, they come and talk to you. They are being interactive. So I guess that gave me more of an opportunity to know about certain conferences and webinars and networking groups and, you know, getting connected through LinkedIn. I started being more active on LinkedIn and, you know, trying to connect to new people of the same interest. So I think that piqued my interest. And I think that gave me a broad opportunity as well. And then when I went to the conference a couple of months ago, I would say that's the best place to meet the best people from your, you know, field, because mm-hmm. they all come from all different organizations, all different world with their own specialties and skills. And I think mm-hmm. when they share it and when you talk with them, I think it just makes you feel like, okay, this is something that you don't know and this is something that you can do. And then they mm-hmm. stay connected and they share information with you even after you are departed. So I think, yeah, I got most of the opportunity of, you know, networking, and now I'm getting used to it and getting started and getting my way through it within the last 2 years only, not before that. Mm-hmm.
Right. So that's wonderful that you're able to start networking. And it's hard also just given now. Thankfully, I think we're out of COVID or, you know, mm-hmm. getting on the other side. People are getting in person more. That gives you opportunity to meet more folks. From a technology side perspective, as you know, organizations and tools, diagnostics, all those sorts of things are getting more sophisticated, mm-hmm. right? How are you kind of educating yourself around the technologies on the science side?
So when it comes to science side, so when you have like a friends and everybody from your first workplace and then they get departed, now they all are scattered in a different groups of companies and, you know, learning different technologies and working with the different companies. So some are in advanced clinical, you know, medical devices, like implantables and heart devices and everything. So some of your current colleagues, they come from a different, you know, environment, and they are together in the current organization. And then when you are looking into something that's similar, so as a regulatory affairs personnel, you always have to know that whenever we are trying to do a regulatory submissions, you have to see like what other companies with the similar devices have done. So we do those kind of competitive analysis as well, you know, and then subscribe into the US FDA and other newsletters, you know, trying to understand the aspects. Then there are learning modules, like even I have enrolled into RAPS, that is American's mm-hmm. Regulatory Affairs Professional Society, the CAPRA, which is in Canada. That's again the Regulatory Affairs Professional Society of Canada. So that's there. Mm-hmm. So I'm a member of them as well. And there are interesting articles being shared every single week. And that gives me a tons of information. Sometimes it's difficult to absorb as well. But then Yeah. And many times I have this tendency to look around and Google myself. It's like, okay, what is the current trend of 2023 medical device advancement? So right. I guess I just do that.
Well, you can ask ChatGPT now and it'll tell you exactly what you want to know.
Exactly. So, I'm still learning my way through that, you know? I just feel naive about not knowing all this stuff. maybe because I'm just not getting any sort of time. But yeah, I have heard a lot about that now. I'm going to try that ChatGPT.
Yeah, it's so I think even for myself, it's, you know, there's so much information out there, right? Mm-hmm. So why I was asking my questions is kind of like, how and where do you find the buckets of information that you need, and how to cultivate your network and portfolio of reference material, right? Are there trends in from a regulatory perspective that you think we need to be looking for?
Other trends, definitely. You know, I would say like regulatory is even more drier than the quality assurance, I would say, because most of the times you do not do any quantitative work. It's more of a qualitative work. And most of the days, there are days like when you just read. When you are on work, you just read and read and read. So I think I would say that some of that interactive ways of, you know, talking through all the requirements, maybe the way they do webinars and all stuff, I would say like whenever this professional societies or maybe communities get together, I would say an interactive group chat or group discussion, or maybe, you know, bringing your point things out the way that you do like in master's or MBA programs or anything like that. That would be really interesting because sometimes you just get bored to death reading all these regulations. They are like, what, 200, 300 pages long sometimes. And when you are on the page number 300, you will just forget what was on page number one. That what happens. Right. And you are just, you know, trying to summarize your way out of it. And sometimes there are no ways. That would say sometimes discussing these things through with the other people should be more frequent. And those trends, like, you know, discussing the regulatory requirements, the changes that happens, you know, once a month meetings, around the table coffee chats on what you learned this week about your particular devices or your new drugs. I think that would be more knowledgeable, because sometimes maybe the approaches that the drug regulatory people are having, you can implement that in medical device as well. So I think it's a cross interactive thing that happens because most of the approaches, they would be similar. Only the regulatory requirements would be difficult. So I would say I'm definitely up for it if someone starts that.
Yeah, that sounds like a good, I hear this often as well, right? Like, so, and again, sometimes it's more on the more traditional quality and regulatory affairs side, right? They're very siloed in that. They're GLP, GCP, GMP, right? And they think that it's always their particular, like, I only know this and I only know that. And to your point, like, it is so that the methodology and how you think about things is spread across all of it,
exactly.
Right? And furthermore, the products that most companies make today are much more complicated than one single thing.
Oh, yes.
And so the products that, and that's exciting to me, right? So that really, it challenges us as quality professionals, right, to really be creative and think about what you're doing, what's important, what are critical to quality attributes, you know, what are the true endpoints, are those endpoints changing? Like it's an ongoing conversation and it's not a static thing anymore.
Absolutely.
Where in the past it was very static, right? I mean, you can even just as simple like a pill of aspirin, right? It's very, very static. It's just almost a single chemical compound put into a pill, right?
Yeah.
Whereas there's much, much more sophisticated stuff out there, which require more expertise in a lot of different areas. It requires different groups to come together to brainstorm and figure out how they all work together. And then what is the overarching methodology from a regulatory perspective, right, to get those filings created,
absolutely,
right, and crafted such that it captures the proprietary information as well as, you know, keeps that drug or medical device moving forward.
Yeah, so, and now there are like a combined systems going on as well, like drug plus devices. So there is, like, as you said, like right. so many things going on in the market. Like right. earlier, it used to be like one device or one drug doing just one thing. Now they right. have amplified that. We know about like this device, it's taking image, it's translating the image into thermal image or 3D image, and then you can learn it into the software. So device has yep. a software and everything is connected. And trust me, this software stuff just doesn't get into my head. It just doesn't.
Well, it's complicated, right? And especially when there's parts that really matter and then there's parts that don't matter, and the lattice in which we've built, right, really requires a disciplined look at risk, a disciplined look at intended use, a disciplined look at what is the intention of the medical device or combined, you know, product. And by the way, oh, then stick on regulatory affairs on top of it. And you want to do indications for multiple things, not just one thing anymore.
Oh,
right.
Yes.
So you spread your risk out there by going after multiple, indications, to hit one of those targets.
Definitely.
Right?
Definitely. And then you have to do a brainstorming on identifying how this device can be misused as well, because there can be a way. So yeah, there are a lot of things that goes around, and it's like a never ending sea, right. I would say.
So if we were to pitch this to, you know, new freshmen in college sort of thing, so what would you recommend that they take to study, be interested in, and how would you pitch coming into this world of quality and regulatory affairs?
So the first thing that I would have, put as a disclaimer is like, what you study in a college is totally different than what you do in a company. So mm-hmm. like whatever you study, like they will just tell you the theoretical and textbook aspects of all the things that goes. But when it comes to the practical implementation, there are like tons and thousands of things to look after, and then you have to weigh around the risk versus benefits and pros and cons, and then you have to, so the college or university world doesn't tell you. So my first ever advice will be, start with a small company. I always love working with a small scale companies. I have worked with a big scale company as well, but there are like 2,000-3,000 of employees as well. The downside of, you know, there can be a perk. There can be perks, and there can be good amount of salary that you will be getting from larger companies. But the downside is you will just keep doing one single task till you change your job. So you will be stuck. You will be limited. Working in a small company, or even I would say work in a startup company, you will get to wear multiple hats. Being as a regulatory affairs personnel, I get to talk to all the persons, R&D, manufacturing, marketing, customer facing, customer experience, salesperson, purchasing person, and management. And I get to talk with all of them, learn how they work, tell them how they should improvise. And based on that, I learn a lot of things. And when you start wearing multiple hats, you are able to identify what is your forte or area of expertise is. Because sometimes thinking of all the scopes that goes into market that, okay, hey, regulatory pays a great amount of money, let me just go there. But when you come into the field, maybe you just feel like, okay, this isn't something that I signed up for. This is not my cup of tea. I cannot do this thing. Or maybe my area of interest is something other than this, like manufacturing or R&D. Maybe when you go into those kind of fields, and when you go into like a small scale companies, you identify how you put your best foot forward, how you work in a stressed environment, and how your problem solving skills goes around. Because you are just one or two persons army that is working all the things around. And the regulatory or quality assurance department is the smallest in any of the organization. So if you're working at a startup or a small company, you are just one man show. So you know how things go, and that's how you will learn your way. So I will just say, start from small companies. And if you start that way, maybe you will just love to work in the small companies for your whole life, I would say. But yeah, that would be my best advice. And that's what I learned from my mistakes, that I started from the bigger organizations and then went to smaller. And mm-hmm. I just love working with the smaller and startup organizations now.
That's lovely. Yeah, the opportunity is rich, right? Because the amount of steps to get to beginning to end are smaller. I also, part of what you were saying around quality being small.
Yeah.
So that is also a theme that is often, again, generalization, but often the case, right? Quality teams tend to be on the small side because historically we say, you know, quality is overhead and not part of the process, right? So it's seen as this extra thing that needs to be, and that just, you know, how it's been pitted against, parts of the organization from historical purposes has been unfortunate disservice to the profession. No, right?
That's right. But in that way as well, I try to look at the bright side of that as well, that even if it's like an isolated one, you get to be a standalone department, you know, you are independent. Mm-hmm. And no matter what that passes through you, you are the mm-hmm. final person who signs on most of the things. You are the one who establishes the procedures. You are the one who interprets the complicated standards in a simple language to the employee of the companies. So I would say I just look at the brighter side that, okay, I'm someone as an independent who's working on it, who get mm-hmm. to tell other people what to do and not mm-hmm. the other way around. So I guess that's mm-hmm. what I love about being in quality.
Yeah, you like that. So it's also interesting because you move from a bigger to a smaller company. Like you don't get that opportunity in the bigger company necessarily to have that sort of influence. Oh, right?
Definitely, definitely. But right now when I get to have that chance, I think I just love that aspect of the work. And that's way you connect to people in more efficient way, I would say. And also I'm still trying my way to learn, you know, how not to just shove the requirements on everyone's faces, but explain mm-hmm. the importance of it, that why they are doing what they are doing and what's the importance of their work on the overall quality and how quality contributes to their work. So I'm still trying to learn how to, you know, connect those dots, because mm-hmm. working in a bigger company, again, that's how I have learned. Like in bigger companies, the regulatory and quality assurance people are like a bit of a very bad attitude, I would say. So mm-hmm. they just tell you that, hey, this is wrong. You just do this thing to it that way. So mm-hmm. I learned that attitude first. And then when I came, you know, to a settled environment, and I just felt like, okay, no, this is not how you make people do things. You mm-hmm. you have to come around and, you know, find a way. Like if you want to tell your kids that, hey, you cannot do that because this is not right, you try to make them understand why this is not right and not just scold your way through that. So that's what I'm trying to still learn, trying to mm-hmm. adjust based on the, you know, approaches of the people around working with me as well. But also I'm going there. And again, my boss, General Leung, who's a chief technical officer at Mimosa and the CEO as well, they are kind enough to, you know, tell me and teach me that, okay, this is how we should do that. So that's the in the plus side that I love working here.
I like
here.
That you've gotten that mentorship within new organization, Aaron. That's great. So what are some future goals for yourself?
For me, I'm just trying to, you know, I just feel like that, okay, I'm just getting started on my journey to this quality assurance aspect. But I just feel like I always want to, you know, do more, something that's efficient or maybe effective in a way that's creating an impact and, you know, making a small amount of change in the system or something. So I'm happy with my job. I love doing my job. But someday I just feel like, okay, I want to do something on my own, like, you know, consultancies, freelancing of the same field that I'm working into. And I want to excel my area, and I want to, you know, broaden my scope of learning. I just don't want to be limited to medical devices or a single systems. I want to learn more, and I want to help more organizations, more small scale organizations that, you know, cannot afford to have a quality assurance department of their own, but I can still, mm-hmm. you know, provide that help, you know, in a way that I can do. So I'm focusing on that, and I'm trying to achieve that goal.
Nice. Great. Yeah. Diversifying, some folks call it a portfolio resume, right? Where you specifically kind of target different parts of an industry, but different areas such that you can have that broader knowledge over and not necessarily pigeonhole. So that sounds great that you're wanting to expand beyond where you're at.
Yeah. And I think I just feel fortunate enough that within these 7.5 years of my overall experience in the field, I get to work with clinical research, pharmaceuticals, and medical devices. So I've gotten an experience, but not enough to, you know, excel mm-hmm. in the target. So I'm finding my way around that.
That's good. Is there any advice that you have for my generation? What we could do better?
I don't think so that I have any advice because I still learn from your generation. I will just talk about my recent experience when I went to our contract manufacturer site and the regulatory person over there, he's like, I think in his middle or late 50s, and the approaches and the amount of, you know, the way that they explain things, I think this certainly comes with an experience. Mm-hmm. We can say that, okay, your ways might be old, but the experience matters. And in mm-hmm. most of the fields, like my husband, he's preparing for this, his lawyer's licenses. So we have a say in India, and I think it would be everywhere, that the lawyers and doctors, the more experience, the better. So I think in a way of quality assurance and regulatory, also I will say that the more experience you have, it's better for our generation to learn from that. And maybe we can, you know, tweak those ways around. We try to find a shortcut, maybe more technical ways around it. But the basics, they never go away. And we all come from the basics and we all learn from the basics. So I wouldn't want to change anything because even when, you know, sometimes I just want to have any sort of guidance or expertise or advice, I always talk to my dad and he tries to explain things the way I want to hear, but in a way that his experience is also in there. He's 60 plus years old, so he knows the world better than me. So even in the smallest things, he tells me how things work. Then it is up to me how I tweak my way around, make it more easier for myself. So yeah, I don't want to change anything.
Well, I like that though, but what you're, it's actually a form of yes and that I call it, right? You're informing from the experiences, right? And tweaking and moving forward with and making it new
exactly.
For you.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Because we all, like, this generation is more high-tech based generation. We believe in shortcuts. Yeah. We believe in, like, things that gets done within half an hour and not 3 days. So we try to find a way around, but the experience gets us started.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you keep me on my toes, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah.
So is there anything else that you want to touch on before we wrap up here today?
I think I'm good. I think we talked about most of the things, and I'm really grateful that we talked about these things, most of the things that I have never gotten a chance to talk with someone else. So I'm really, you know, I really appreciate that you got me an opportunity to open up myself in a way that I have never done that in public. So thank you for that.
Absolutely. Sure thing. And I hope to meet you in person soon at the next Connects event, and we'll figure out how to do something else together.
Sure. I would definitely love that.
Awesome. All right. Well, take care, Ruja.
You too. Thank you so much for having me once again, Dori.